It's official. Embraer will build business jets in Florida. NTSB wants pilots of turbocharged airplanes to have better information. And Airbus announces more A380 delays. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, May 14th, 2008. It's official. Embraer announced yesterday it plans to invest an estimated $50 million U.S. in a new facility in Florida dedicated to its executive jet business. The new 150,000-square-foot facility will house a final assembly line. That's a first for Embraer in the U.S. It will be capable of producing both the Phenom 100 and the Phenom 300 executive jet models and include a paint shop and a delivery and customer design center. The announcement followed a high-level meeting between Melbourne Mayor Harry Good, Florida Governor Charlie Crist, Enterprise Florida, and other state and local officials. The company says its preferred location is Melbourne International Airport. A memorandum of intent has been executed between all the necessary parties, and a final decision is predicated on approval by the state and local governments. Embraer expects to create about 200 skilled positions by 2011. The National Transportation Safety Board wants operators of piston-powered aircraft equipped with turbochargers to recognize the signs of turbo failure and be better able to deal with the problem in flight. On Tuesday, the board recommended the FAA require manufacturers to amend their pilot operating handbooks and airplane flight manuals to include information regarding turbocharger failure under emergency procedures. Specifically, the board wants pilots familiar with procedures to minimize risks of fire in flight and loss of engine power. Following the May 2004 fatal crash of a turbocharged Cessna T206H in Homer Glen, Illinois, NTSB determined the pilot reported a loss of engine power while cruising at 1,150 feet AGL. A witness reported hearing several attempts to restart the engine and that black smoke billowed from the aircraft during each attempt. The plane struck trees, a garage, and then exploded. Quote, "This examination revealed that the in-flight emergency procedures lacked information to assess the difference between an engine and a turbocharger failure and did not provide any clear guidance or instructions on how to handle a turbocharger failure once a pilot identified the problem," unquote. The board notes it issued a similar recommendation in April of 1994 following another incident, this one involving a Cessna T210L. Airbus has completed its announced A380 program review and has some awkward news to share with customers. CEO Tom Enders announced, quote, "This is unfortunately not the first delay, and as CEO of Airbus, I have to say I regret this very much," unquote. He stressed that while overall the recovery program is progressing well, and most aircraft promised for delivery in 2008 have already flown, a planned steep ramping up of production to meet future deadlines will not be possible. Airbus plans now for 12 deliveries in 2008 instead of 13, and 21 instead of 25 in 2009. Quote, "We are not talking about a catastrophic scenario," unquote. Details about the new plan and delivery slots in 2010 and beyond will be discussed with customers in the coming weeks. Airbus says it's too soon to talk about the financial impact. Quote, "This will follow discussions with the customers and a more precise evaluation of the implications of the new delivery schedule for 2010 deliveries and beyond," unquote. A veteran airshow performer who calls himself the Tumbling Bear has broken both ankles, some ribs, and some bones in his left hand, but is expected to make a recovery after a crash at California's Modesto Airshow over the weekend. 66-year-old Rob Harrison has been upgraded to fair condition by a local hospital after he hit the ground in his Lin 50 near the end of his routine at Modesto Airport Appreciation Day on Saturday. The NTSB reports the accident followed a series of barrel rolls. A witness said Harrison was coming out of a loop and just didn't pull up. The aircraft hit the grass off the end of the runway and slid about 100 feet, remaining upright but losing its wing and landing gear, the fuselage separating aft of the cockpit. In a message posted Tuesday on Harrison's website, Susan Harrison wrote that her husband, quote, "is doing well and is moving around. Today, when waking up in the morning, he first asked where the food was," unquote. It was the first accident in the 13-year history of that airshow. Up next on ANN, Valkyria Airport is spared major damage in a brush fire. Another 757 loses a wing panel in flight. And an off-airport landing by a British Airways 777 still mystifies investigators. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 14th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. What investigators say was an arson fire has scorched the grounds of the Valkyria Airport in Florida, but the aircraft and the hangars are okay. ANN news spy Mike Whaley tells us the worst is past. Quote, the fire burned through the wooded area by the entrance and burned much of the grass. There was some fairly minor damage to the airport office trailer and to the mosquito control facilities, but they weren't destroyed. The T-hangers and aircraft were okay, unquote. At last report, EAA Chapter 1288's meeting at the airport was to go on as planned last night. Mike reminds all friends of the airport to attend a special meeting of the Valkyria Airport Advisory Board on May 20th. The immediate fire danger has passed, but as ANN reported, the airport is far from safe. The Airport Advisory Board's newest member is Janice Walters, who opposes the airport's existence. A Northwest Airlines Boeing 757-200 bound for Detroit from Los Angeles made an unexpected stop in Las Vegas Monday after a wing panel reportedly fell off in flight and struck the plane's horizontal stabilizer. According to the FAA's preliminary report and flight information from FlightAware.com, a 3-foot by 2-foot panel came off the plane's right wing about 30 minutes into the flight. A reported hydraulic problem forced the diversion to McCarran. A post-flight inspection revealed the panel had hit the plane's tail. This is the second time in 2 months a wing panel has blown off a 757-200 in flight. As ANN reported, an upper panel fell off a U.S. Airways 757 on March 22nd and struck the side of the plane's fuselage. NTSB later determined the cause was failed fasteners that were installed as part of an FAA airworthiness directive in 1991. It's not yet known whether the same issue or panel was responsible for the Northwest diversion. The January off-airport landing of a British Airways 777, 1,000 feet short of the runway at Heathrow, looked at first to be an investigator's dream. Everyone on board survived to tell the story. The plane was largely intact, and it not only had the required black boxes, but an additional recorder installed by the airline, available to provide data. But nearly 4 months later, all that information hasn't led to a definite cause and has served only to intensify the mystery surrounding two Rolls-Royce jet engines which nearly simultaneously refused to spool up when both the autopilot and then the crew commanded a power increase. The Washington Post reports British authorities still believe ice or some other obstruction in the airliner's fuel system was to blame, but conclusive proof has been elusive. Bill Voss, president of the Flight Safety Foundation, points out, quote, this has potentially broad implications that go beyond this one airplane, depending on what they find, unquote. Among those larger issues is certification for extended-range twin-engine operational performance standards, or ETOPS. That's a set of standards governing the maximum distance from alternate landing sites an aircraft is allowed to fly. The 777 has been certified to the longest ETOPS range allowable, but the standards are based on the failure of one engine, not both, which up until January 17th, many believed was near impossible. The British Airways flight had passed over Siberia, near the Arctic Circle, and far from emergency airports. The question which continues driving the investigation is, what if it had happened there? Mike Bush is a well-known aviation maintenance expert and occasional Aero News contributor. He's advised Cessna owners on maintenance for over a decade, and his savvy aviator seminars have graduated more than 1,000 owner pilots, many of whom have returned glowing reports about more reliable aircraft and financial savings. Despite success with his seminars, though, Mike admits his approach requires more time, effort, and involvement than many owners have to give. So now, he's announced the formation of SAM, as in Savvy Aircraft Maintenance Management Incorporated. SAM Inc. provides professional managed maintenance for owner-flown aircraft, ranging from high-performance single-engine airplanes to cabin-class twins and very light jets. Quote, "Professional maintenance management has long been the norm for corporate jets, but has never been available for owner-flown aircraft until now," unquote. SAM's approach includes a shift in thinking from scheduled maintenance and overhauls based solely on hours flown to actively monitoring the health of aircraft systems to indicate when maintenance is actually needed. Fixed annual subscription fees range from $500 to $1,000 for most piston singles and twins, not counting actual maintenance and repair costs. SAM's premise is that owners who use the service should be able to pay the annual fee out of savings on maintenance costs. That makes the time you save and the increased reliability a bonus. By the way, congrats to Mike, who was recently honored by the FAA as National Aviation Maintenance Technician of the Year for 2008. He's scheduled to be my guest tomorrow on the Aero News special feature. Still ahead, former Silver State helicopter students sue a bank that wrote their student loans. Bombardier chooses Pratt & Whitney for the Learjet 85. And a Southwest passenger is arrested for refusing to turn his cell phone off. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, May 14th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. On February 3rd, when Silver State Helicopters went Tango uniform, many of its more than 2,400 students were left with incomplete training, but owing student loans of $50,000 or more. Comparisons to a Ponzi scheme were common, especially after Silver State's official press release said its Chapter 7 bankruptcy filing resulted from, quote, "a sharp and sudden downturn in new student enrollment," unquote. Charles Ponzi was a legendary swindler in the early 20th century. His name is still associated with fraudulent business schemes, which pay attractive returns to early investors with income from later investors, concealing operating losses and disproportionate payments to company executives. When the growth of new investors stops, the scheme collapses. Now, the Sacramento Business Journal reports a group of students has filed a class action lawsuit against KeyBank USA NA, based in Ohio, claiming that the bank not only was a knowing participant in a fraudulent investment operation, but that it has a history of partnerships with other failed vocational training enterprises. The lawsuit has been filed in California Superior Court in Alameda County by Pinnacle Law Group LLP of San Francisco. Pinnacle attorney Kevin Rooney told the paper the suit asks the court to block KeyBank from collecting on the loans and prohibit the bank from reporting delinquent payments to credit reporting agencies. In a press release, the law firm alleges, quote, "As with KeyBank's previous failed vocational school partners, Silver State was unregulated and unaccredited, and when its Ponzi scheme collapsed, it filed bankruptcy, leaving its students facing KeyBank's threat to enforce the loans," unquote. In particular, the suit charges that KeyBank violated Federal Trade Commission regulations by issuing student loans, quote, "without including very specific language that the borrower has the same claims and defenses against the lender as they have against the school," unquote. Silver State led a controversial existence even before it shut down in February. In 2006, 9 former students sued the school over advertising claims they said misrepresented the employment prospects awaiting graduates. Others complained the school did not maintain a large enough aircraft fleet to provide students the opportunity to fly the hours they've been sold. We'll hear comments on Silver State from the legal community on today's Aero News special feature. At NBAA last year, Bombardier introduced the Learjet 85, the first Bombardier business jet to feature all-composite construction. This week, David Khalil, Learjet Vice President and General Manager, helped announce the selection of Pratt & Whitney Canada's PW307B turbofan as the new plane's power plant. Quote, "The PW307B is the perfect match for the Learjet 85, bringing some of the most advanced greener engine technologies together with PW&C's trademark dependability," unquote. The 307B is rated in the 6,000-pound thrust class and builds on 6.5 million flight hours accumulated to date by 300 series engines powering 1,000 aircraft in 50 countries. It promises superior performance, high durability, and low operating cost, significantly lower emissions and noise levels, and high dispatch reliability and easy maintenance. Of particular interest in some markets, the 307B features the company's Talon advanced combustor technology, which significantly outperforms ICAO standards by over 30% for nitrous oxide emissions and meets Zurich 5 requirements for zero surcharge fees. The flight attendants sound pretty serious when they tell you not to use your wireless phone after the airliner door is closed, but what happens if you ignore their instructions? An Austin, Texas businessman found out there's a limit to a flight crew's sense of humor, even on a Southwest flight, and now faces a Class C misdemeanor disorderly conduct charge and a $500 fine after refusing to end a 20-minute cell phone call he began during final descent into Dallas on Monday. The Dallas Morning News reports Joe David Jones, described as the president of a startup environmental company, was met by police at Love Field. Flight attendants said he ignored multiple warnings to turn the phone off, finally telling the attendants to kiss a southbound feature of his northbound anatomy. A police report notes he continued to be disruptive when police met him at the gate. Southwest is famous for a lighthearted atmosphere in its cabins, but airline spokeswoman Beth Harden says looking the other way in cases such as this is not an option. Quote, "It was a safety regulation that we're required to enforce, and we're simply not in a position to make exceptions," unquote. The FAA bans the use of cell phones on all aircraft when in flight over the United States, based on safety recommendations from the Federal Communications Commission, and airlines can be fined if they don't enforce the rule. Finally, if you have friends who work for the airlines, you may be familiar with companion passes. Employees who enjoy free travel benefits are given the passes so they can take a friend along a certain number of times a year. Now, there are downsides to traveling that way. You're always flying standby. You could be asked to adhere to the airline's employee dress code. And once the flight takes off, you may be ordered to leave your seat and sit in the lavatory for an indeterminate length of time. Well, at least that's the charge in a lawsuit filed against JetBlue by Gökhan Mutlu. Mutlu says he was using a buddy pass to make a 5-hour flight from San Diego to New York when the captain ordered him to give up his regular seat to a flight attendant who complained that a jump seat was too uncomfortable. He says the pilot then told him only employees could sit in jump seats, so he'd have to sit in the lavatory. The Associated Press reports the $2 million lawsuit also claims that when passengers were told to return to their seats due to an encounter with rough air, quote, "the plaintiff had no seat to return to, sitting on a toilet stool with no seat belts," unquote. A male flight attendant eventually knocked on the lav door and told Mutlu he could return to his original seat. But after 3 hours in the can, it was kind of too late to turn the customer experience around. JetBlue has so far declined comment. Hey, you want to have some fun? Let's give Mutlu Kate Hanai's phone number. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, ANN's Jim Campbell talks with two aviation attorneys about the challenges still facing former students of Silver State Helicopters. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.